It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to another one of our holiday editions of the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown. We have a great crew of experts in studio and some very special visitors. Terry Takai is with us. We're talking with her about her extraordinary career in technology, and she's back home in the state of Michigan. Mike Brennan will be with us from the Florida Keys if he can tear himself away from the tiki bar. And we've got lots of other good things, including a second hour that's all for you with your questions for our experts here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome aboard. It's the Internet Advisor. My name's Foster Brown. And with me, of course, and glad to have him back in-house, is Mr. Gary Baker.
It's great to be back. I've been gone for 2 weeks. My son, Justin, got invited to watch the Army-Navy game with the Naval Alumni, the Detroit chapter of the Naval Academy Alumni Association. So it was all these old guys and Justin. And I don't know who had a better time. Justin was just having so much fun talking to these guys, and they had a lot of fun talking to him. But that's where we were. And then
I love it.
But happy to be back here today. Got a great show.
Yep.
Wonderful show.
Mr. Cal Carson, good to have you here.
Yeah, about as close to the Navy as I got was my bathtub at home.
With the little rubber duckies?
Oh, at least. At least one.
And Ed Rudell is on his way. He'll be in the studio in just a little bit. I'd like to introduce Ed, to bring her in right away. Terry Takai, good to have you with us, Terry.
Thanks so much. It's so exciting to be back on the show.
It's exciting to have you back in Michigan.
It is. I mean, yes, back indeed. In Michigan. I'm back in Detroit. You know, it's just been fantastic. And it's such an honor to be back on the show.
Well,
thanks so much.
I have to, we'll talk about this in the next segment too. But in case somebody were not to listen to the next segment, I mean, you and I met when you were at EDS. That was after a very distinguished career at Ford in IT there. Came to EDS, worked on the GM account, went on to bigger and better things as the very first CIO for the state of Michigan, then the CIO at the state of California. But I want to talk to you about your last gig. How did you become the CIO for the Department of Defense? I mean, wow. That's neat. And now we got you back here in Michigan and working with Meridian Health.
Well, Gary, it's great to be back, as I say. And, you know, happy to talk a little bit about the exciting times at Department of Defense. You know, it's one of those things where I always say you never know exactly where you're going to end up and never turn down an opportunity.
Oh, listen, we are definitely going to get into that in depth a little bit longer. We have Mike Brennan with us, though, and I want to make sure I get him in here because I'm not sure we can keep him away from the tiki bar that long. Mike, welcome to the Internet.
Well, I just came in from jet skiing on the bay with my daughter.
Stop it.
We're going out to dinner tonight, but I'm sitting on my deck where it's 78 degrees and sunny, and how you doing, Terry? Long time no talk to.
Absolutely, Mike. It's great to hear your voice.
This guy, he is going. He hasn't taken many vacations, but he figured he'd wag this one in our face a little bit.
Yeah, and he's doing a good job. I've been watching some of the photos being posted Facebook and elsewhere. So
you mean they're actually publicly
at least the ones that he can publish.
I'm looking forward to all the key lime pie you're going to be bringing back.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, Mike.
Oh, yeah, I love that stuff.
In our show today, we're going to look back at 2014, and boy, you've had a lot of stuff that's happened with MI Tech News. And by the way, Mike is the editor of MI Tech News, and you can subscribe to that for free by going to internetadvisor.net and then going down and hitting the subscribe button. It will get you a load of the top headlines in technology entrepreneurship from Michigan and a whole bunch of audio and now visual elements as well, come to you free of charge every Friday. So, Mike, a big year of changes for you. What are some of the biggest things that have happened to you in MI Tech News in 2014?
Well, certainly we've expanded quite a bit. We have all these partnerships now with all these different organizations that were independent, and I'm sort of bringing them together under one umbrella. We have, of course, Michipreneur.com. We have my website. We have you guys. We have IT in the D. We just added Tech 248 in Oakland County.
Oh, that's right.
I'm optimistic we're going to add the Engineering Society of Detroit here in the first quarter. And together we're going to kind of corner the market on technology coverage in all different mediums. You can get it in text, in audio, in video, you name it, we'll serve it. You know,
Love it. What have been, for you, some of the biggest stories? Now, I know this is maybe kind of off the top of your head. Biggest stories that you've run into during 2014?
You know, I gave that a lot of thought, and I went through a lot of my stories, and I think it's more trends. I think what it really is the revival of the Michigan economy is the big story. Because we all rode that train down. Boy, did we ever. And now it seems like every story I was reading was always upbeat about somebody winning a grant or starting a new division or coming to the state or you name it. So I think that really the story of 2014 is Michigan is back. I mean, we've got half the jobs back we lost during the Great Depression back 10 years ago.
Wow.
So I think that's really it. It's just, I mean, I couldn't really single one out, but as a trend, I think that's really it. So.
Well, you're also connected with Michipreneur and Mandalawan and the other folks who are there with the businesses that are kind of budding here. I don't know, incubators that have sprung up downtown have produced some incredible companies. And that seems to be a big thing, too. Pardon me?
Yeah, there's a half a dozen co-working spaces downtown Detroit. Downtown Detroit has become a magnet for young entrepreneurs. Certainly Josh Linkner's had a big hand in that.
Oh, yeah.
And other groups, including Amanda, who's a co-owner of Bamboo, which is a co-working space.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chic place to live. Now, the problem is once they start having babies and get married, they tend to go out to the suburbs.
Well, where there's some grass and yards and things, but it's an awful lot of fun. Hey, and what about us empty nesters or close to it? Maybe we'll be moving back down.
That's it. Yeah, well, you know, I can move downtown now that I'm at the advanced age of 62. I'm not retiring. I know. I just celebrated my 60. That's hard for me to believe.
That's right, on Christmas Day.
Oh my
God. Christmas Day, baby.
So, but no retirement in sight, but certainly I can live my life the way I want to. And I think it's
That's
fun
excellent.
To be able to walk to Comerica Park.
There you go. Mike, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for editing MI Tech News. And folks, in the brand new year, keep on watching MI Tech News. You'll find it here on the Internet Advisor. Go to internetadvisor.net and sign up there. Mike, you enjoy the rest of your vacation, and we'll see you in the brand new year. Welcome. It's the Internet Advisor. Gary Baker, Ed Revelle, Cal Carson, and a very special guest in studio, and that is Terry Takei. And Terry, welcome back to the state of Michigan.
Thanks again. I'm excited to be back.
And back to our show.
Back to our show again. Terry, the last time we had you on, were you CIO in the state of Michigan at that time?
I think so. Yep.
And
actually winning awards at that time, I recall, for the website that the state had, the best website of any state in the country. Mm-hmm. So that was wonderful news. And then,
wasn't a big enough challenge.
Yeah. And, you know, the state of California, okay, you know, everybody's got to do a stint there. I get it. But I do want to talk to you about the Department of Defense.
You were there, right?
Mm-hmm. I was there 3.5 years.
Three and a half years. Well, now your title there, I think, was the assistant. I'm trying to think if I got the. What was your official title there? The assistant.
I was initially the assistant secretary of defense for network and information technology.
Okay.
And then the job got renamed while I was there. It seems to be a pattern for me. and so they actually established it as the chief information officer while I was there.
So you were the CIO for.
Then you were the first CIO for the Department of Defense. Now somebody had that kind of job, but they didn't have that title, right?
That's correct.
The first one to have the title.
Mm-hmm.
What did that signify for the Department of Defense? Were they moving into a new way of looking at technology?
Absolutely. I think that in the past, you know, first of all, the Department of Defense is all about technology. That's right. One of the things that I discovered when I got there. Yeah. There isn't anything that isn't connected to the network. But it was really a way of stepping back and looking at the technology, not as a part of all of the other programs, but as technology in and of itself, and how was that going to be able to move the department forward, and where were the areas of innovation?
Speaking of innovation, I mean, my sense is that the government has always been, in terms of trying out new things, like maybe a decade ahead of what the consumers are. Am I right in that presumption?
Well, I think it's yes and no. There are clearly the science and technology organizations like DARPA, who was at the start of really the internet.
That's right.
But then you also have the same challenges of government, which is government spends money slowly. It's hard to replace old technology. So it's this interesting juxtaposition of really advanced technology and then the challenge of implementing it,
yes,
which means then renovating technology is very slow and very difficult.
Yeah, you know, I think of so many places that I've been where, you know, it's just really difficult to keep up, and you have to replace, you know, if you're on a 3-year refresh cycle for all of your, you know, personal computer equipment for all the staff. And you know, so many times, you know, people say, can I get my computer replaced? And say, well, you know, how old is it? You know, 5-6 years. And I kind of think almost the same thing at the Department of Defense. If it's not on the cutting edge, it kind of sometimes gets lost, but then people can't use that cool technology, right? Is that part of the problem?
That's exactly part of the problem. When you spend somewhere around $37 billion a year on technology,
wow.
You spend a lot. But then when you think about, for instance, I'll give you an example, the introduction of mobile technology and secure mobile technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, DOD is very used to their own land mobile radios, and being able to introduce that new technology in a very controlled and deliberate way is a real challenge.
Yeah. Cal?
Did you get a chance to, and I know we can't go into depth about it or anything like that.
Or we'd have to kill you.
Yes. And I'm halfway dead anyway. With DOD, did you ever have to interface with other groups within the government, like the CIA, the FBI? You get a chance to see some really interesting things technology-wise?
Well, absolutely. First of all, one of my major partners at DOD was NSA. Because clearly, from a cyber perspective, NSA is a part of the Department of Defense and a really major, major player there in, from a cybersecurity perspective, along with U.S. Cyber Command. And, of course, then there's their close ties with the intelligence community. So all of that is very much linked together, particularly as you think about cyber.
How well coordinated is that? Because I have this terrible sense that there are all these little kingdoms fighting for their, you know, little piece of turf.
It's not
how
little.
Well coordinated. Yeah, I know. I mean,
actually, it's very well coordinated.
That's a relief.
Given it is really given the challenges of cyber, and of course the to be able to address the cyber challenge, it's really about sharing information. And it's sharing information across government agencies, because you really have to look at it from a defense of the country. But then it slowly gets into law enforcement. And if you don't have that tight collaboration, we're really not going to be able to face the challenges.
What were some of the, speaking of challenges, what were some of the biggest ones for you coming from the public sector? You had worked at Ford for many, many years and with EDS and many other companies. Moving then into a government thing, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced?
Well, I think some of the biggest challenges, you know, people said to me, well, you understand politics because you were at Ford, and it was a big company. And I've said to people, that's a little p. You're really facing the challenge of either the legislature or Congress is really responsible for your budget. But the direction comes from either the governor or the president or, in my case, Secretary of Defense. And then you have all of the civil servants. So you're really trying to balance all of that in the middle of the public scrutiny, of course, which comes from being part of the, being looked at by the media.
Mm-hmm. Now, I may understand, right, the person, I think, who was over you retired after 30-some-odd years, am I right? Where somebody was up the line, I'm sorry, but I've been gathering a lot of information that some of it may be jumbled in my head, but it looked like a lot of the key positions for the CIO of the Defense Department were now open because you left, and I think there was somebody that was under you, I think, that also left.
Yes.
Is there somebody ready to take that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The individual who's currently the acting CIO at Department of Defense actually was the CIO for Department of the Navy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
And so had, you know, considerable amount of experience there. So he took my spot when I left.
You know, what I'm so proud of and just marvel at, and that is how well, you know, you've certainly done well, right? Coming from Michigan, coming from the auto industry, and then moving on to some really very cool and very important roles outside of Michigan, now coming back, that's great. But you and I know a number of other women that have started here in Michigan, started a lot in the auto industry. Andy Karaboutis is one.
Karen Antrell.
Karen Antrell at Walmart, mm-hmm. CIO of Walmart. Andy Karaboutis was the CIO at Dell and now the CIO at...
Biogen,
thank you. I knew she'd just taken that job in the last few months. But there's been many others. Is there something in the water here? What's going on that we can export all of these really wonderfully, very smart, technology-oriented women?
Yeah, did you grow up in the same log cabin?
Well, you know, Gary, I think one of the things that's really important to note, and this was something that actually was a part of my interview process at Department of Defense. And when I went to Department of Defense, I asked people, why would you hire me? Mm-hmm. Right? I haven't been in the military. I haven't been in federal government. Why?
You've been in something a lot more difficult, and that's the auto industry,
well,
right?
Well, and what they said to me is, interestingly enough, they didn't say anything about my state experience. Because, mm-hmm. of course, when you get to DOD, the states are somewhat, I shouldn't say irrelevant, but, but they said to me, you know, you've been in a big organization. You were at Ford Motor Company.
Yeah.
There have been other Ford Motor Company executives that mm-hmm. actually have gone into federal government. And I think it's the fact that the industry, for all its ups and downs, teaches you certain levels of discipline
That's
and
right.
process and how to structure an organization that I think is very valuable.
Yeah, absolutely.
It probably also gives a fresh face onto the thing, too, rather than be pocketed in that one government view. You can see it from a broader perspective.
Terry, hang on. We're going to be coming back in just a minute. Terry Takai is our guest in studio here. We'll be talking a little bit more about her new job, which is at Meridian Health. And I think healthcare, in many ways, is the new frontier for information technology. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. And we're going to ask our guys here about looking back on 2014, the best and the worst. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell is in-house, Kel Carson, and we are delighted to have Terry Takai with us back in the state, back in the saddle here as the new CIO at Meridian Health. Am I right, Terry?
That's correct.
Okay, now you've come from the position of government, very important position of the Defense Department. You're now back in the state of Michigan. What was that like moving back in here to the private sector?
Well, it's been great. It's really been something that I've been talking about doing. It seemed like there was one government job after the other, but it's great to be back, and it's really fantastic to be in the healthcare industry.
Yeah, and you still owned a home here, so you had to come back to, sooner or later, had to come back to your home, right?
Exactly. I'm still in Troy, Michigan.
There you go. Good.
Oh, that's neat. Now, why the health industry?
Well, you know, as I looked at kinds of the things that I wanted to do next, you know, one of the things when you work for the government, you really do get the feeling of being able to give back and being able to be of service.
Mm-hmm.
And as I looked at the different industries, of course, I'd been in the automotive industry and, you know, I'd looked at a number of things. And I felt like the healthcare industry, number one, it's a great place from a technology perspective.
Oh, Lord, yes.
And, you know, it's also a place where, you know, it's really now about how do you help the healthcare industry really help all of us
mm-hmm.
that are really trying to make our way through some very, very complex times in terms of insurance.
And we've seen
all the talk to one another in the same language.
Yeah,
please,
yeah.
Terry, please. I mean, for the last 5 years, as a cancer patient, I've been faced with just a nightmare of the lack of communication. And just now, I belong to the, I'm being treated through the St. John Providence Health System. They're in the process of making, just bringing everybody on board the digital world. Right. And as best I can, I'm coming on. But so often, my oncologist can't talk to my GP, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'll fax those right over.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness, I hate those words.
I know, but I did have one experience recently where I was going in for a transfusion, and my information was actually in there, all my medication. I was like, wow.
It's getting there.
It's getting there. So that must be one of the biggest challenges, is getting all these systems to talk to one another.
Well, absolutely. It's getting all the systems to talk to each other, but it's also making sure that your health insurance providers talk to each other.
Yeah, that's right.
And that you know what care that you can get and what's the best way to get it. And the health insurance industry is really changing. And it's really becoming much more proactive in terms of being advocate for the member.
Terry,
and that's what's so exciting.
Herding cats on a federal level may be nothing compared to doing this.
Hey, there has to be an app for that, right? There has to be. I mean, have you got a Blue Cross Blue Shield or an Aetna insurance app on your phone?
I don't, but I do have a St. John one. St. John Providence has now got their own apps.
It's evolving.
Absolutely.
And the one thing that we've been reading about over the last number of years is how fast Meridian Health has been growing. So that's got to be fun, kind of a company that's yet small enough, although, you know, it's not a small company anymore by any means, but it's small enough you can really get your fingers in and personally maybe make a difference in a company that's just growing rapidly.
Well, absolutely, Gary. I guess there's several things. I mean, as I was thinking about it, one of the things that's so exciting about the company is it's really was started by a physician, his wife, and a CIO.
Mm-hmm.
What a fantastic combination of technology, you know, a strong woman,
right,
and
at
a physician wanting to do what was right about patient care. So that's been, and then to be, they're huge, the family's huge advocates of being downtown Detroit. Mm-hmm. We're right on campus Martius.
Oh, excellent.
So you combine all of those things, it's a really exciting company.
Yeah, that is exciting. That's wonderful. All right, hey, you know what I'd like to do, since we got all this accumulated brain power here, is let's take a look back. Now, by the way, I did you guys a favor. I did not post your predictions for this year.
Thank you.
Not up there yet. It will be eventually.
Thank you, Foster.
But as you guys, all of you, Terry included, you look back on 2014. If you had to put it into one sentence, 2014 was the year of, how would you fill that sentence, Terry?
Well, I predicted that we'd be talking smack.
Smack.
Social, SMAC, social, mobile, analytics, and cloud. And I think it was every one of those four.
I think you were talking smack.
We were talking smack all year.
how would those type of social, mobile, analytics?
So social is Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram came on big and strong. Twitter actually now with the rumor of maybe a new CEO coming in that their stock is going up, but they lost a little bit of the headway that they had made, but still, you know, tremendously important, and people are spending gobs of time right on their social media. On mobile, we're all carrying not only phones, we're carrying bigger phones than we used to, you know,
pocket computers in many ways.
Absolutely. And then analytics, less so from a consumer oriented, but from an enterprise, we're seeing so many companies now really getting their arms around the analytics and helping make that work better, and we're able to serve their customers a little bit better. With that becomes a loss of privacy, of course, and there's got to be a balance there. Got to be a balance. But
that doesn't sound like fun. Mine's fun.
Okay, what's
2014 was the year of drones.
Drones,
quadcopters, and drones. Yeah. The government drones.
We actually
regulations and airspace drones.
We flew drones in the studio.
Studio. Rick Broider brought one in. We have a little video of that.
That's right.
The year of the drones, Cal.
I think it was the year of the most mundane technology we've had in a long time. We didn't have any real innovation that popped out this particular year. I mean, everything was polished, made a little bit better than what it was.
Evolution rather than revolution.
Right. We had no iPads. We had no
Apple Pay.
New
we did do have a...
That's... No.
Okay. All right.
Because we had, there's been NFC out there.
I threw that softball at you. I figured you'd hit that one out of the park.
No, I was very disappointed. I was really looking for something really cool to come out this year, and really nothing really cool came out. There were wonderful refinements.
Yeah.
There were some conveniences, but nothing really said, I got to have one of those.
Well,
boy, he must be hard to shop for Christmas.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, he's looking like for a 90-inch TV for his wall, or a wall for his TV, as the case may be. Terry, how about you? 2014 was the year of...
Well, for me, now you have to remember the world that I'm coming from and going to.
Yeah.
But it was a world of really awareness of cyber and the cyber threat.
Yes.
I think that if you look at SMAC... Mm-hmm. And you look at sort of social media combined with mobile and with cloud, some of those technologies are maturing, but the question of how to protect and how, in fact, you know who's on your network and you know who's looking at your information, I think, is big. Now, the other thing, though, Gary, I would say on analytics, particularly now with my new healthcare and looking at it from the standpoint of healthcare providers, but also insurance companies, it's really about how do they harness their information to actually be able to do de-identified analytics, I'd say, not by individual, but to really predict health trends and to really understand, you know, how best to advise, or to your point, individuals on what's the right healthcare.
Yeah, that's. I think we're going to see more and more of that when we, as we see wearables, you know, with health rate monitors.
That's right.
And
I think that will be. Well, if you're looking at it, 2015, and we will do that, by the way, next week. But I think that wearables, I think, generally speaking, will be what is going to be unfolding in this coming year. The Apple Watch should be coming out, and it's supposed to be rigged up with all sorts of sensors, et cetera, that will respond to.
And Microsoft Band already has that, right?
Yes, the Microsoft Band is out there. I have an iPhone 6 Plus, and it's got all sorts of, I mean, it's ready to take all sorts of apps that will be working with other wearable things. I would call 2014 the year of the hackers. And it kind of along the lines of what you were talking about, Terry, I think that the hackers kind of redefined a whole sense of what was security. And privacy has been woven into that. The Sony hack in particular, I think, at the end of the year, to see a corporation so undone by, I mean, just right down to the very bottom of the barrel, everything out there, social security numbers, everything, contracts.
Emails,
movies.
Yeah, but if you keep your system as loose as a bowl of chili from a security standpoint, you get what you deserve.
I agree, but it was kind of like... The ultimate statement of, if you don't button up your security, this is what they can do.
This is a darn good example, and I would hope that more and more corporations and other entities that have large enterprises are tightening up their facilities just after seeing this type of thing actually happen.
Well, and I think a lot of times people become a little arrogant, and, you know, there are... As a pilot, I always knew that there were two types of pilots, those that have landed with their wheels up and those that are going to, right? And that's the old joke about flying, but the same thing with being a chief information security officer, and that is there are companies that have been hacked and there are companies that are going to be hacked. And,
right.
And that's the whole commentary that you made about cyber, which rolls in all of that. It's the breaches, it's the hacking, and really, we've been paying attention to it. We've got to pay so much more attention this next few years.
Hey, we're going to come back in just a second with something a little more mundane. This has to do with those gift cards that you may have received that you really aren't going to use, but you'd like to get some of the money from them. Well, Kendall Paris is going to be with us from giftcardgranny.com to tell you how you can do that. Certainly much more mundane. Well, you know, gift cards probably a big part of your Christmas. I know we a lot of grandchildren, and that was the way that we were able to give gifts to a lot of them. Whether they're physical cards or online gift certificates have really become a common present during holiday. The National Retail Federation estimates that consumers will spend an average of $1.724 billion on gift cards this season. That's up, $172, that's per person. That's up from $163 per person, and that the gift card spending is like almost $32 billion.
Well, and the other statistic is there's over $1 billion of gift cards that go unredeemed every year. And
roughly,
that is
that's incredible. That's interesting. Roughly 24% of shoppers have at least one unspent gift card left over from last season, and that's between $25 and $50. So what do you do with that? Well, we have somebody with us right now. Kendall Perez is with us from a site called GiftCardGranny.com. And Kendall, first of all, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I understand you folks have a solution for those of us who have got gift cards that are burning a hole in our pockets right now.
We do. So GiftCardGranny.com is a comparative marketplace for buying and selling gift cards. So if you have a gift card that you received that you don't want, mm-hmm. you can go on our site and see which reseller will give you the most cash back for your card. And then you work through them to get up to 92% back in cash value for your card. And you can either get a check sent to you. Depending on the reseller, you might be able to get that amount back in PayPal or even as an Amazon e-gift card.
Now, did I understand that, matter of fact, the deals, there's going to be, you're not going to get the full value back, as you said, right? So let's
That's
say if
correct.
I have a $60 gift card, how much of that might I expect to get back?
On average, you get between 70 and 75% back. It really depends on a few things. It depends on how popular the gift card is. It depends on the inventory that a particular reseller has of that card. So, for example, Target, Walmart, Amazon, basically those cards that a lot of people use quite frequently, mm-hmm. you're going to get a lot more cash back for simply because typically people will use those cards. They're not really interested in selling them. But things like a regional restaurant or maybe a clothing store that doesn't have very many locations, you might not fetch as much for those cards. But what we believe in is the fact mm-hmm. that, if you're not going to use those cards, if you can even get, 60, 70% back,
sure.
you can actually use that cash.
Yeah. Kel?
Do you offer gift card swap? Like if, I had a $100 gift card to Bed Bath & Beyond, and I don't do a lot of shopping there, but, but I do shop a lot at Home Depot. Do you offer a swap service or anything like that?
We don't. It's just cards for cash, basically. But we also offer the discount element of it. So in addition to selling gift cards on Gift Card Granny, you can also buy gift cards at a discount. So
you can sell
your Bed Bath & Beyond discount, turn around and see how much money that would give you in a Home Depot gift card. And I think currently, Home Depot specifically, is 10% off. You can get a little bit more of a value
tool
by
time,
buying
Ed.
Gift cards, too.
Tool time.
I need a new palm sander.
So, Kendall, you don't sound like a granny to me.
I'm sorry.
You're masquerading here or something.
I can see her with the little glasses baking gift cards.
It's in your mind, though, doesn't it?
It does.
It has a good ring to it. You don't forget it. It's all about branding. So that's kind of how she came about. And actually, it was kind of based on the founder. His name is Luke Knowles. It was based on his grandma. So the character that you see on our website kind of looks like Luke's grandma.
I see. All right. I was wondering how that worked, how you came up with the name. And you're right. I think that's a great brand.
By the way, I want to repeat something you said, which was that a way that you can maybe even get better value out of it is to have the money come back through PayPal or Amazon. Am I sure you get a little better rate that way?
Yes, absolutely. And some resellers will offer a better value in those forms than if they have to mail you a check, simply because it's easier for them to do it. They don't have to pay for postage. So if you have a PayPal account and you use it, that's a great way to get a little bit more value. Or if you're a big Amazon spender, getting it for an Amazon gift card is also a great option.
Those are excellent ways of doing it. So now, giftcardgranny.com. By the way, folks, you'll find that on our homepage. You can go to there and click and find more about that. You essentially are kind of like a clearinghouse, where you post the different cards and where they can get the better values out of them, right?
Exactly. So we're kind of like the Google of gift cards, so we can show you who gives you the best rate for your gift card if you're selling it, or who's going to give you the best discount if you're buying it. So you don't have to go to all those individual reseller sites to find that. We have that all posted on our site.
So I'm on there right now. Matter of fact, Cal, you mentioned Bed Bath & Beyond. I see also Abercrombie & Fitch. Applebee's, Barnes & Noble, some of the ones that are up there right now.
Smoothie King.
Ooh.
I mean, come on.
We have, let me take a look here. You can actually see on the homepage, it tells you what the current inventory is. So we have over 64,000 cards shown on the site right now, 10,000 of which are new to the site, and the average discount is about 11%. And when you go to individual web or individual card pages, it also kind of gives you a little trends report. So I clicked on Best Buy, for example. Currently, we have a little over 1,200 cards that are for Best Buy, 200 of which are newly added. Shows you the average discount. It kind of shows you a trend of both inventory of and of the discounts. You can kind of see, you know, at what point was there maybe a higher discount. It's really kind of information rich here on the website.
Yeah. Now it says I see a filter by card type. There's physical gift card and then the online gift card. Which is usually a better deal, an online gift card or a physical gift card that you get?
You know, it kind of depends on the retailer. So, for example, if I'm looking at Best Buy, let's see here. And it looks to me like the better value here, if I get rid of eBay, that's one thing that you have to keep in mind. eBay is listed in our sellers,
and often
the discount looks a bit misleading just because it's a user-based discount. But for example, with Best Buy, a physical gift card, the highest is a little over 4%, whereas the online gift card is a little over 4%. So it's about comparable, same. But it does vary by retailer.
Well, the big news, Kel?
Well, maybe I was in the granny mode and I really wasn't paying attention. But so do I take my gift card and mail it to you and then you give me the value back on it? How does that process work? Did I miss that?
No, we didn't talk about that. So, yeah, that's a great question. So you're going to work directly with the reseller that you select. And typically you do send them your card's information if you're selling that gift card. So everyone has a little bit of different process, but you basically enter in the gift card number and the code, and then you send it to them in the mail, or some actually don't even require that.
Yeah, they just hit the number off the card.
And then within a couple of weeks, they process it, and you get a check or however, you know, you requested that refund to be received.
Typical amount of time it takes to process?
You know, it's about 2 weeks when you send it in. So it can be anywhere, you know, from 10 days to 2 weeks, depending on how quickly they turn that around. I know that when I did it, I think a good rule of thumb is to just kind of take a picture of the card and the code so you have all that information. If there's any questions that come up, they do send you a receipt. And I did receive, information or an email when they received the card, and they told me when it was processing and how much time it would take. So they're really good about kind of keeping you in the loop.
I would imagine that it speeds up a little bit if you use Amazon and PayPal, because that can be done online.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's kind of one of the advantages of using that, because it doesn't take as much time.
Boy, Amazon has just, I think it was 110 million Prime users that they got this year. It was just incredible.
I re-upped mine.
I know. Kendall, thanks so much for being with us. And what a great way to wrap up this holiday season. A way for you to take those gift cards that you may not be using. You can turn them into cash and then go off and buy whatever you'd like. Kendall, thanks so much for being with us. That's giftcardgranny.com. And Kendall, have a very good new year, too.
Thanks, you too.
All right. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. And Terry, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a delight having you in studio here. And the very best to you at Meridian Health.
That's
guys,
thank you.
We're going to strap it on, because coming up this next hour, that's the hour that people get to call in with their questions at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. This is your opportunity to call us live with your question about your computer. Maybe you got something for Christmas and you've got some questions. We've got some people here happy to answer your questions. 800-859-0957. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, Gary Baker. Ed Riddell and Cal Carson are in studio here, just waiting for your calls to answer your questions. Well, maybe you got some really neat new laptop for Christmas, but you got some questions. Well, we've got people in here who can answer them. Cal is an expert in the Apples, and Ed can help you with the Windows machines, especially Windows 8 machines. But you got to call us, 800-859-0957. Folks, I hope that you will use this as a unique opportunity for a tech call. You know how you sometimes have to answer, you call up those problem lines and you wait forever to get an answer to your questions? Well, if you call us right now, toll free at 800-859-0957, we've got a whole bunch of people in studio here who will do their very best to answer your questions about your computer, about your cell phone or tablet or whatever else it may be. But you got to call 800-859-0957. And our mantra here is the only dumb question is the one you don't ask.
And if somebody has an easy question out there, we'd like to start with an easy one. That's always good. We'd like to get one under our belt here. You know.
I'm sitting there thinking to myself, it's 3 days after Christmas and there's some guy still on the floor with all these parts. He's looking at the instructions going like, what should I do? This computer won't go together. Maybe I'll call the Internet Advisor.
Yeah, there you go.
That's exactly it.
I've already fielded several questions from relatives and friends. And the first thing I say is go to Ninite.com, N-I-N-I-T-E.com, and download and install Classic Start for your Windows 8 system, because they're going, a lot of them are still going from XP or Vista.
Yes.
And they miss that Start menu.
Yep.
And they just don't want to spend the time to learn the Windows 8 modern interface.
If there's any hope, folks, I've been working with the Windows 10 preview.
Yes.
And in Windows 10, by the way, we're going to have some folks from Microsoft on with us this coming month in January. Mm. On the 21st of January, Windows will officially launch the Windows 10 preview for consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Some of us have been victimizing ourselves and our machines.
Foster, did you see that article I sent you?
I know.
Oh, Foster had a problem with the Surface where he installed the 10 version
10 preview
on a Surface. And what happened was is that after a while, it just became jello.
Oh,
and he had to give it to Microsoft to actually to fix it, because it actually somehow corrupted the restoration partition that's on the Surface.
Yeah.
And what did Microsoft do this week? They've actually made available the
restoration
partition creation utilities. So if you had a Windows 8 system and you needed to reinstall it, and somehow that partition became corrupted, you have the ability to reinstall it.
Which is really good news.
Something similar, and I think a lot of Windows 10 beta testers were running into that.
But getting back to your point, Eddie, a lot of people now are finding that for a new Mac, if you're going to get a new Windows device, it's got Windows 8.1 on it, and yes, you will still find somewhere you can go back to Windows 7, or a few that have Windows 7 on it. But in general, the gifting that's going on, if there's gifting, or by people buying new laptops, great prices out there this year, are going to find Windows 8 on there. And so your point is very a good one, that there are places you can go to get a Start menu for Windows 8.1 that will look a lot like Windows 7 did, and will be much more familiar to you, much more comfortable.
And that way the laptop or the new desktop doesn't end out the window in that snowdrift.
Well, and a lot of people are getting new computers, and they've got to figure out how to get their old stuff onto the new computer. And that's something we can help with as well.
Hey, guys, look, maybe we'll talk a little bit about what are some of the first things you should do when you get a new laptop. We can talk a little bit about that. But, folks, I want to tell you again, for those of you who are...
I just had a nasty thought.
Uh-oh.
Go to the corner store, pick up a six-pack or something.
Well, whatever your poison is. Yeah,
whatever
exactly.
Your poison is.
And drum. By the way, we want to welcome...
your own screensaver. Yeah, that looks like it's right.
I want to welcome Irina. Irina is sitting in tonight for Annie Nichols. Irina, thank you very much. She is going to be our lady of the phones tonight, and she's waiting to take your calls at 800-859-0957. Why should you call? Well, if you've got a question about your computer, about staying connected to the internet, it's a great way to get an answer for it. And when you do ask your question, a whole lot of other people benefit from it. We have a lot of fun talking with you as well. So please take advantage of that toll-free number that's open there at 800-859-0957. It's open until 6 o'clock. It's a unique opportunity for you to have a tech call in your own native language with a bunch of guys who are really good at answering those questions.
Well, you know, it was fun. About a month ago or so, my son was with me, and we went into the AT&T store, and I picked up my iPhone 6 Plus. Mm-hmm. And, while we were there, and he wanted to have a couple things done, he was switching phones, so he wanted to to trade up to another phone that I had. So he took my old phone. So while we were there and messing around, there's a really neat display at the AT&T store. And there's been many of them. We saw them at Best Buy, where they talk about the Internet of Things and about how you can use app to control lights, thermostat, all sorts of things. You know, your heat, how to turn the heat on from your phone on your way home, how to turn it up.
Security systems.
And the security systems and the cameras. And some are wired, some are wireless, and those hard to reach places where you want to put the cameras up. And it has gotten very sophisticated out here. I know the prediction show isn't until next week, but I will tell you what. I think that by the end of next year, all of us will have some sort of connection with what I'll call the Internet of Things. What's called the Internet of Things, but I think that's going to be a big thing.
You know, I should have added that to my list. I had a gentleman that I work with at General Motors, and he installed all that nesting. All that Nest material.
Oh, Nest, yeah.
Nest, that's what it was. I was trying to remember the name of it. You're right. Yep.
Oh, I use Nest.
Do you already?
Yeah, I have.
You're way ahead.
I have Nest. I have a Nest thermostat, and I also have a Nest CO and smoke detector combination, and they both talk to each other.
Really?
Ooh.
Okay, so I want to know more about that.
If there's a fire in the house, the smoke detector will tell the thermostat, turn the furnace off so you don't feed the fire.
Wow, that is neat. So there's the Internet, interconnectedness of things. Going to take a quick break, folks. It's your turn. 800-859-0957. It's the Internet Advisor, hour number two, your hour. What do I mean by that? Well, if you've kind of wandered by and found us, you may say, what in the world is this program? We've been here for about 17 years now, Gary. Matter of fact, this coming month, it will be our 17th year, won't it?
You know, we haven't always been on this time, but we're on 4 to 6 on Saturdays, assuming that MSU doesn't broadcast a basketball game or so. But we've been all over the dial, and we've been settled here for 4 or 5 years now.
Yep. And so we're going to be here today until 6 o'clock. Our lines are open at 800-859-0957. So you may have just kind of stumbled upon us and said, what is this? Well, there's a room full of experts here. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, all who have been involved for many, many decades in handling computers and diagnosing problems and dealing with them, especially Ed and Cal, who work with General Motors and work with executives there to help make things happen and fix problems. And so they've had a lot of practical hands-on experience. As a matter of fact, Ed, you were kind of kidding it. You know, the family gathering, I'm sure people had lots of questions for you about computers at that point.
Well, the only question they had is during the white elephant exchange, like, why did you give away a computer toolkit? You know, with all those minuscule, I wonder who this came from.
All right. Who's that? And, you know, there's lots of people that will hear us on one of our affiliate stations.
Yes, that's right.
Because we're syndicated. Mm-hmm. And if they would like to call in live, first of all, they can send us email, and we'll try to answer those anytime during the week or save it till the weekend. But if they want to call us live, they can also go on to the InternetAdvisor.net site and click on the link there, and they can listen to us live no matter where they are, even if they are in a different radio broadcast area. So
we'd love to hear. So let's get to our phones right now and talk with Dominic. Dominic, happy holidays, and welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Well, thanks, Foster. I appreciate the greetings, and I hope you guys have had a good holiday so far.
It's been a wonderful one, wild one, too. So what can we do for you?
Well, I've been listening to you guys for years. Really enjoyed the show, by the way. You guys do a great job.
Thank you.
I've got a computer I put together back in 08. I had it done by a commercial enterprise, but I demanded the best that was available at that time.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out whether it's going to be practical or not to try to update from XP to 7 or 8. I've already got 7 on my laptop, and it's not bad. I've been told from other people that it's friendlier than 8 and its updates.
Okay.
But I don't know whether it's practical to go buy additional RAM
to get more performance out of XP. Now, let me give you, that's a very good question you're asking. I think a lot of people around are asking that. Ed, you've got some thoughts.
I do, but I have to realize that this is in excess of a 6-year-old, possibly almost 7-year-old computer. And it, as much as I love building computers myself or upgrading them, you have to make a cutoff point on the laptop or on the desktop computer. First, you have to make the decision: are you going to stay with the desktop, or are you considering a laptop?
I'm considering trying to keep the desktop.
Okay, you already had a laptop. Oh, you had a laptop that's running Windows 7. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the laptop's got 7 in it. It's deep. It's fast. It's good.
Yep.
But
because you'll have a hard time buying a desktop with Windows 7 on there. You'd have to go to a mom-and-pop shop, as you did before, or have someone build it for you and max it out, because I don't think you're going to be able to upgrade this. You'd have to replace the motherboard. You have a 7-year-old power supply in there. Right. That's probably ready to go. I mean, it's probably working, but
been working for almost 7 years.
Well, basically, the monitor, the keyboard, the mouse, all that sort of stuff that's wrapped around it, it's probably fine. Still use it.
Yeah.
I'd reach in, take the CPU out, back up whatever data that you need off that particular drive, or just take the whole drive and stick it into an external enclosure that's on USB. And then I'd go out and I'd buy a new CPU. So that would save you some money, because you wouldn't have to buy the entire computer all over again.
Yeah. So after you're looking, how much? $300 to $500?
Well,
if you get top of the line?
He sounds like a guy who wants a really robust machine. So I think he'd probably be paying somewhere more in the $500 or $600 range.
Okay.
I'm not a game player, but I just like things to happen when I ask for them.
Yeah. So I would definitely go with no less than 16 gig of memory. I'd go with no less than a 2 terabyte hard drive.
So you're talking about a new motherboard? So,
yeah.
No, I'm talking about a new CPU.
Well, when you're talking CPU, that is a chip. You know, so
RAM?
You're talking about an entire tower or desktop,
the tower
with the power supply, the motherboard, the hard drive, the whole works.
Right.
Except for keyboard, mouse, monitor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, keyboard, mouse, monitor are all doing fine. I do have a 2 terabyte backup system external.
Good.
That I back things up with, but I've got to refresh it.
Dominic, let me give you an image. What you're asking about, remember the Yugos? Remember that car, the Yugo?
Yeah, yeah.
What you're talking about kind of is, can I put a V8 engine into a Yugo?
Mm.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't know if the car would even run. It probably would self-destruct at some point. The point is, there's a lot of other things under the hood that have changed, not just the operating system. So, you know, the power supply, the hard drive, the bus, everything has changed. So if you want performance, then getting rid of the tower you have right now, mm-hmm. say all the peripherals, but getting rid of that tower and then getting a refurbished, for instance.
Or a brand new and just spec it out yourself.
One.
The thing is, though, I mean, if you were to try to upgrade this one, you don't have access to your old computer anymore. What if something happens? Are you that critical piece of data? Or, what's that one program that I had? And you're not going to be able to power up that other computer with the Windows interface and expect it to function.
Well, what's even worse than that?
So
is
you just pull it out and then replace that whole box with another one.
Because here's the other thing, too. When he goes to, if he tries to upgrade the machine he has, he's going to have to buy the operating system. That's going to cost him at least $150 bucks or more. He's all one-third of the way into a brand new machine.
Yep.
Why even monkey around with the old one? You could still keep the old one, just sit off to the side as a backup or a temporary emergency unit or something like that.
Or turn it into a NAS.
But the new one is going to do a couple of things for you. One, it's going to give you the capabilities that you want. Number two, it's going to give you room for growth. And those are two things that you're going to need. If you kept a computer for 6 years, you're going to need a new one to be able to move ahead for another 6 years.
And Dominic, I don't know where you're in Farmington. Well, you're not too far from Micro Center. And there are other ones out there.
Well, Micro Center is the one that put that machine together for me.
Okay. I went to Micro Center, this is now 5-6 years ago, and picked up a refurbished Dell Inspiron tower for about $250, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it was running Windows 7. I've since upgraded it to Windows 8.1. But my point is that you will find refurbished machines very often. And you have some risks there. But it's been running for 6 years, my wife. Now, I do occasionally hear a holler from the other room, and I have to go in and rescue her.
But that isn't the hardware problem.
It's a husband problem.
Yeah,
in any case,
it's more of a picnic problem, right? Which is
I know the laptop that we had built through HP 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was an i7.
Mm-hmm.
And because that was the best they had at the time, and
right.
I guess they've gone up from there since then.
I think they still have the i7s, but it's a different level of i7. I think they're now running new Haswell processors, I hate that word, that are more energy efficient, that sort of thing. But you're definitely a candidate for a newer machine, in my opinion, but that's my opinion.
So, Dominic, the idea, and for the rest of you out there who maybe have XP machines and can I upgrade? Yeah, you probably can.
It's too big of a jump.
You can, but the problem is you're going to run into a world of problems doing that. You'd be better off looking for some of these less expensive towers that are out there. I mean desktops that are out there at places like Micro Center in Madison Heights, or you can find them online as well, and that will run you $250, $300, maybe a little over $300.
Less than that's
most yeah, of them. That will give you the opportunity, as Ed, I think one of you said, Cal, was it, you know, 16 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah.
It will give you a chance to expand the RAM. Like, for instance, on mine right now, it only goes up to 4. So I'm very much thinking of doing something like putting like a solid state hard drive in there.
You're going to have a hard time running Win 7 with 4 gig of RAM.
Yeah. You know, we all have solid state today, right? As well as 8 to 16 gig of RAM.
Right. Exactly.
And you know, they are a very different type of machine.
So, Dominic, there you are. Some food for thought. Not necessarily a definitive answer, but I hold us giving you something to chew on, okay? Happy New Year to you, and I hope that it's a prosperous one. We'll be back in just a minute with Rich from Westland. It's that time in our program for me to salute the people behind the glass. Irina, thank you very much for being our screener this evening, and thank you also to Rich Lozinski. Thank you guys very much for playing the very important role you do in helping us to produce this program. By the way, it seems the gremlins have been unleashed on the technical world. We've been experiencing some problems behind the scenes in our homepage, internetadvisor.net, that the folks at IGD Solutions are working on. Hopefully that'll be fixed by the time that you have to click over to internetadvisor.net for the show notes and for our podcast, which will be up on Sunday night. By the way, and some people have also, we had a number of emails about not being able to get our iTunes podcast, and that is something that we have been working on for 2 months, and I tell you, it is almost impossible to get untangled.
I have no problem, because I use an Android.
You know, I have no problem. No, I have no problem either, because I'm using Downcast as my aggregator, and it finds our podcast without a problem, but for some reason, iTunes has been fouled up. And we've been doing our very best to get it fixed. We will continue to do that. But if you want to get the latest podcast of our program, simply go to internetadvisor.net, click on the podcast link, and then you can either listen to it there, stream it there, or you can download it to your phone or wherever you'd like and listen to it at your leisure. Okay, phone number again, 800-859-0957. And let's go to Rich from Westland. Happy holidays, and welcome to the Internet Advisor, Rich.
Thank you. I have a printer that won't print off my computer.
Okay.
And I think it happened ever since my provider changed things. But I'm not sure.
Okay.
Is it a wireless printer?
No. No, it's the old style, old HP 750.
Is it hooked up with a USB cable?
If
it's a 750, that sounds like almost like a parallel cable.
Yeah.
Is it the real wide flat cable, or is it a, you know, how big's the cable? How does it connect to your computer?
Well, I'm looking at it right now, and there's a round cable with a green light lit up.
Okay.
In the back, and then there is a kind of a square hole.
Yes.
In the back jack, but nothing's hooked up to that.
At the back, do you have a desktop computer?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay, at the bottom of your desktop computer, does it connect down there with a big flat?
Yeah, that I checked.
Oh, you know what? But you did mention that a few moments ago you were looking in the back of the printer. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Is the connector in the back of the printer, does it sort of look like a house? You know where?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. There's USB. Supposed to be a cable that plugs into that from your computer if you're not wireless. So,
I'm not wireless, and I bet you that's the problem.
Okay. You've got, but you saw it plug into the back of the printer, right? And you said there was a green light.
But he says he does not see the cable plugged in there. He saw where the cable should be plugged into.
Right. There's one cable plugged in with a green light.
And
there's another.
That's the power.
Like a house that has no cable to it.
Yep.
And there's nothing plugged into that?
That would be the USB cable, correct?
Yes. Yep.
All right. So you're going to want to look down on the floor around there and see if you find another cable that has a
end on it that's shaped the same way as the house that's on the printer, and you're going to slide that one in, and then after you put that in the printer, follow the other end and make sure it's plugged into the computer.
You know, this is a very common problem, because remember, with USB cables, that's why I get paid so much. You know, this is... You know, USB cables, there's no screws. Remember the old cables, the 9-pin and the parallel cables? They all had the little ears that bent over so that...
Keep them stuck
in there. Stick it in the component so they won't pop out, or you screw them in. Yep. USB, they just slide right in. So a lot of times when people are rearranging things, or you have an internet service provider that's replacing your modem and doing stuff, they're moving things in your desk. Guess what pops out? The cable in the back of the printer.
Or if you're in the pets.
The pets, cats.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rich. What were you saying?
I'm a little embarrassed.
No. Don't be embarrassed. Because sometimes, you know, the old thing is, excuse me, sir, is it plugged in? You know, that's happened to me. And I'm sure it's happened to everybody here at one point or another.
Right?
Yeah,
for all of us.
Just make sure that the connections are there between that. Just look for that USB link. Pop it back in. And if you want, restart your computer to make sure that it sees that printer again, and you should be good to go. Okay?
Matter of fact, if your computer is on when you plug that in, it should probably do a chirp noise, and down on the lower right-hand corner, it'll say discovered USB device.
Right.
Oh, okay, good. Right.
So, Rich, when you ask a question like this, it reminds me of other times when people take their Ethernet connection, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll look and they'll say, oh, it's plugged in. And I'm going, you know what? If there's not the little green light, go back there and just push it in all the way.
Until you hear it snap.
And they go, oh, yeah, now the green light's on. Now you're connected, right?
So
and we've all done that. And I'm going, I know it was connected. And I pulled the modem or I pulled the router just a little bit and pulled it just away from a good seat. And that was the problem. I had to go back and push all of those in just that, you know, fraction of an inch longer, you know, farther in.
The good news, Rich, is that's an inexpensive fix, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's frustrating when you think, oh, no, it's got to be plugged in.
All right, Rich, happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Thanks for being there.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm glad we could help. Okay, John from Grosse Pointe, welcome to WJR. How can we help you?
Well, I've got a problem that's started slowly and it's getting progressively worse. When I pull up a video on YouTube, I try to watch it, and it kind of stalls, and I move my cursor around on, and it plays again, and it's been doing it more and more frequently. But the real problem I'm having right now is it seems that, and when I try to listen to WJR on my computer, if I don't constantly move my cursor around, it doesn't play.
Hmm. Now, that is an interesting problem. That's different than my wife's. From when you were first talking, my wife was talking about she uses Facebook quite a bit, and it stopped. She goes, you know, I was having problems intermittently watching videos that are published on there that people link to YouTube or whatever, and it stopped. And what I had to do with her computer is go into her browser. In this instance, it was Chrome, Google Chrome, and had to clean her internet or temporary internet files. Once I did, and then I also had to disable a few add-ons that had added themselves inadvertently and probably slowed down her browsing experience. So I had to use I had to disable some add-ons or extensions within the Google. So what web browser are you using on yours?
Are you usually Firefox.
Okay. Have you just tried the experience with another web browser like the original Internet Explorer, or if you have another one like Google Chrome?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Now the interesting one is the mouse movement. Cal, do you have any ideas on what could potentially cause that? I'm assuming you have is it a wireless mouse or is it a
wired
mouse? Do you plug it into your computer?
It's wired.
Okay.
The only thing that I can figure is that he just happens to be moving the mouse at the same time that it's buffered up enough of the YouTube video to be able to place
it. Sounds like a buffering issue. Now, buffering.
I would go more for a buffering issue. Yeah. I would do a couple of things. I would probably go into my browser and clear out the cache or empty the cache. The other thing that I would probably do is also go over to the modem itself, turn it off, wait about 15, 20 seconds, turn it back on, and then reconnect my browser up to the internet and see if it'll work there.
The other thing I thought of is you bring up an interesting point that happened years ago when we used to have serial mice. And the same is true with USB mice. When you're moving the mouse, you're actually telling the operating system, pay attention to me, pay attention to me, pay attention to me, right? So you're actually generating what are known as interrupts to move the mouse. Mm. So you're interrupting it enough where it has to pay attention to the mouse movement. I'd be curious to find out is if you were watching the videos and if you pressed the control key or the alt key at the same, instead of using the mouse, pressing a key to see if you got these same results if the video started moving again. And that would tell me that there's something. I can only speculate what it is. Possibly you're interrupting a virus that's on your computer. So you might want to download Malwarebytes if you haven't already done so. And you can get to that at internetadvisor.net, go to our toolkit, and under our anti-malware section, you can download a free copy of Malwarebytes to download, install, and run. But when you install it, do not use the free trial that they offer.
Right.
I mean, you can, but it provides real-time protection.
Just watches it installing.
Yeah, yeah. And Malwarebytes is a utility that scans for malicious software, and it's on demand. I want it to run now.
John, one other thing for you. Just as a diagnostic thing, we suggest to you and to everyone else who's listening, have at least two browsers on your computer. Internet Explorer, plus you like Firefox or Chrome. And it's precisely so that when something like this happens, you can go to the other browser and see if you can replicate the same problem. If the problem doesn't come up, it means that your problem is in the browser you're using and not in your internet connection, okay?
Okay.
So do you have another browser on the computer?
Yes.
Okay, what is that browser?
We have Internet Explorer and we have Chrome.
Okay, have you found the same problem in those browsers?
I haven't really used it on either of those.
All right, try it in either of those and then get back in touch with us and tell us what's going on, okay?
Okay.
All right, happy holidays to you in the meantime. Happy New Year. We'll be back to take some more calls to wrap things up at 800-859-0957. The Internet Advisor, on the air for you. I want to thank all of you out there who joined us for this live edition of The Internet Advisor. By the way, coming up on January the 3rd in the brand new year 2015, we are going to have a very special program, 3 hours long. We're going to be on from 4 o'clock until 7 o'clock in the evening. Coming up on January the 3rd, it'll be our predictions program.
And it's going to get us in trouble, right? Because we always predict something that doesn't quite pan out, right?
Well, we were just kind of talking about that here in the studio. What are the things that will be coming up in 2015? You'll have to chime in. Everybody's going to have their predictions, and we'll make those available on our homepage. But it should be a lot of fun. Coming up on January the 3rd, starting at 4 o'clock, going until 7 o'clock. Lots of time for you folks to get your calls in as well. So let's wrap up our program today and check in with Randy from Oak Park. Randy, welcome to the Internet Advisor, and happy holidays to you. How can we help you?
Thank you. Same to you guys.
Thank you.
I've got a scenario. It was interesting. I just talked to a buddy of mine, and then all of a sudden you guys are on, just found you on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an XP laptop that mm-hmm. I use for work.
Okay.
And I want to move it up to OS 7. And I've got OS 7 Ultimate here. And I asked my buddy if I could do that. He said he's done that upgrade without too much trouble. My concern is I either want to go that here. It's kind of a choice of two evils here, just even having to do this because I use my computer for work. But it's either XP to OS 7, or I have an OS 8 gateway laptop and bringing that back to OS 7 and trying to move the operating system off the new laptop and put, because I don't want OS 8, I want OS 7.
What is it about 7 that you want over OS 8.1?
I'm not into the whole pictures, having pictures for everything.
Okay, just so you are aware, there are things, and Ed mentioned this earlier in the program, there are software packages you can download that will give you what's called the classic start. Am I right, Ed? That's called the classic start
yep.
in Windows 8. So you could take that Windows 8, that brand new machine, because it's got so much under the hood that has been improved since Windows 7. I would like you to take advantage of that, and if your main issue is you don't want to have the Metro, those picture windows up there, you can solve that by installing this called Classic Start, and Ed, you maybe can lead us to that webpage, that yep. will allow you to use the OS 8.1, which is the update,
right.
and use it with a system that looks an awful lot like Windows 7.
Yeah, and Windows 8 is much more efficient than Windows 7.
Safer.
It's safer, got a lot more security. So there's a lot to like about it, but if you're just looking at the interface, I agree with Foster.
If the big issue for you is that Metro interface with the pictures and everything else like that, am I right that it sounds like that's the big issue for you, Randy?
Well, I don't know enough about OS 8 to be able to really answer that. You know, I got the machine and it's basically sat there just as a traveling machine if I needed it.
Yeah.
And the thing is I'm concerned, you know, if I actually, my work machine is the XP and moving that to OS 7 and knowing if the drivers that if OS 7 will find the drivers that I'm using on my XP machine.
Okay.
Right now.
All right, then there's two things then. Let's separate that out. Let's see if we can...
You know, I'm trying to remember Microsoft's tool that they actually have for testing the computer to see if it meets the minimum requirements.
The migration assistant, I thought.
Yeah, I think it's the Windows Upgrade Advisor or something like that. I'm trying to discover what that is. But Windows 7 has a minimum requirement of a processor that's at least a gigahertz, one or 2 gigabyte of RAM, maybe 20 gigabyte of disk drive storage that's available. And
yeah, I'd be moving it to a terabyte. I've got a terabyte external drive.
Yeah, but it has to have...
I would lay a handful of money down right here on the table and go against it if you want to, but that laptop that he has, if it's running XP, is not going to be robust enough to run Windows 7.
Yep.
I'm guessing that's you're right.
And you'd be better...
The most I can go is 2 gigabytes of RAM. That's all.
Oh, no.
You'd be better served just keeping that laptop just the way it is
as a backup.
And continue to do your business on that for right now. Fix the other one up, and then slowly take one application at a time and try it on that Windows 8 machine.
Yeah.
See if it works, and then go to the next one and next one. When you got them all working on the 8 one, then you can walk away from the XP machine.
Well, and I think Ed was right. Upgrade Advisor from Microsoft. You could take and use that to determine what's on your XP machine now that will have no problem running under Windows 8.1. And if you find something that you have a problem with, then you got to figure out how if you can get drivers for it or not.
And here's the other problem with that. It's a good idea, but the problem is that, yes, it'll say it'll run under that machine, but how well it's going to run is going to be determined on the actual hardware.
No. I agree with that.
Yeah,
but
okay.
I mean, the whole idea is if he has something on XP that won't work on 8.1, we ought to know it before he tries 8.1 rather than afterwards.
Well, that's the reason
and
why.
That's
the reason why I said that he should just leave his XP machine the way it is. He can continue to function with it, experiment on the 8.1 machine.
Yep.
Even if the drivers don't work, he won't be out of commission. He'll still have his machine to work with.
Right. Let me give you one other alternative I've thought about because I've got a Cronus either for backup or for doing a mirror of the drive.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm actually thinking is I've got a terabyte external drive to the XP system.
Mm-hmm.
If I go ahead and just do a backup of everything onto using a Cronus and then take that backup and try and put that onto my OS 8 machine.
That is not going to work.
No, it won't.
Yeah, that's not because when you're talking about a backup, are you backing up the data or are you talking about taking an image. Of your entire computer and put it on the other?
Well, I know the image won't transfer.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Then, you know, well, I'm not sure how well a Cronus does cross-platform between operating systems.
That's what the question is. Exactly.
Yeah, and
I don't
know.
And again, we're coming back, Randy, to the situation where this new Windows 8 machine has so much more under the hood. Now, I'm not trying to sell you something here, except to say that a Windows 8 machine, the whole operating system has been updated. Everything has been built to work better for you. The more security has been built into it with Windows Defender.
Yep.
Does it look different? Yes, it looks different. But there are ways to make it look more like Windows 7 that may make it easier for you to use.
Right.
And in the next year, you'll be able to upgrade to Windows 10, which I can guarantee from using it, looks an awful lot like Windows 7.
And if you were going to migrate data, I mean, it's good that you're going to back up your data using a Cronus. It's a wonderful backup utility. But I would stick, you know, after you've done that, I would use Microsoft's file and transfer wizard that you would use between Windows 8 and an older operating system like Windows XP, that where Microsoft puts all your My Documents, your favorites, your application extensions, your printer definitions. It'll move it from one operating system to another in a manner that's compatible between the two operating systems.
That's a really good suggestion. I appreciate, because I know that they went a long way to create a good transfer facility.
Yes.
Yeah, and make sure that your Windows 8 machine has been updated to Windows 8.1.2, I think it is.
Can I just get that online, or is that something that I've got to pay for?
No. The upgrades are there. If you have a Windows 8 machine, you just turn it on. As a matter of fact, if you haven't run it in a while, when you turn it on, it probably is going to tell you have to upgrade this thing.
And if you wanted to make your Windows 8 system look like your Windows XP system, you can download Classic Shell from classicshell.net.
Okay.
Classicshell.net.
And it gives you that classic Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows 7 look and feel.
Okay.
All right, guys.
Randy, I have a good new year. I hope it's a fine one. By the way, keep in touch with us through our email at internetadvisor.net. Let us know how it goes, okay? Thank you so much. Ben, sorry we couldn't get to you, but we'll be with you in a brand new year. As they say, see you next year. We're going to have a special program on January the 3rd from 4 until 7 p.m. live here on WJR 760 AM in Detroit. The rest of you out there, thank you very much for a great year, guys. Thanks so much, Gary, Ed, Cal. Shame couldn't be with us. A little under the weather.
Another year.
Another year. Bites the dust. We'll be back for our 17th year coming up here on the Internet Advisor. Thanks so much, Irina and Rich, for working behind the glass, and the rest of you, Happy New Year.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.